What's going on, everybody? Pete Jensen and Rob Rees back with you. Thursday morning edition NHL Fantasy on Ice. Mailbag time, Robbie. We're going to answer a ton of fan questions. Of course, everybody should always hit us up 7 days a week. NHL Fantasy, NHL Jensen, NHL Rees. What's going on, Robbie?
Yeah, good to be with you, Petey. We got a big mailbag episode, kind of bigger picture view. I know we are 1 week into the NHL season, so you don't want to press the panic button just yet. But I do think, Pete, there's a lot to discuss. There's some big injuries. You know, we're kind of getting through that maybe 1.5, 2 week trend kind of format here. So we'll answer your questions. We'll help you make some decisions. And we've got a great guest today, Petey.
Absolutely. We got Ben Zweiman, our good old friend. What's up, Ben? Ben is over at DraftKings. He's at DK Live, DK Nation. Covers a lot of NBA, but I think hockey's really in his blood. And great to see the NHL partnered back up with DraftKings, Ben, and hope to see more hockey stuff on the horizon for sure.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. It's great to be back. It's been a while. And like Pete said, I've been doing a lot of everything, like NBA, NFL. But yeah, hockey's really my true passion, I feel like. And I've gotten away from it a little bit in past years, but I'm definitely trying to get back into it. Got a couple fantasy leagues. Definitely going to be playing some DFS NHL on DraftKings. So yeah, when I saw the partnership, was really excited for that. So yeah, great to see you guys again.
So Ben and Robbie, biggest news since we last talked, Robbie, Nikita Kucherov out indefinitely for the Tampa Bay Lightning. This has a whole type of ripple effect, right? The futures appeal of the Lightning to three-peat. That's what comes to mind first and foremost, but also a ton of people, some of whom maybe did the same thing last year and got bit because of it, drafted Nikita Kucherov in the top five overall of their fantasy draft. Now he's out indefinitely. Robbie, what does this mean for the Lightning's future appeal? Because betting wise, they're one of the top contenders once again, but I think their roster isn't constructed as well to survive maybe Kucherov being out for a long time if he is.
Yeah, well, I mean, the overwhelming response on Twitter was filled with trolls kind of saying, you know, the LTIR Kucherov situation 2.0 is happening again. You know, all the memes out there, it's kind of funny to see that. But, you know, in terms of futures appeal, I think Tampa's still a strong one. If you put a futures bet, you know, for them to win the cup, you know, it doesn't feel as good now, but just like anything in life, you got to buy when the stock is at an all-time low to get the best return. So get it while the price is good. But Ben, I think this has major, major fantasy implications because I hate to say it, but you can't replace a Nikita Kucherov on the waiver wire. There's just nothing out there that you're going to really be able to, you know, replace bang for buck. But what are your thoughts on the Kucherov thing? Is there anybody on your waiver wire you're looking at to maybe pick up and stream for a little bit?
I mean, so it's funny that we start with Kucherov because I actually have him in a keeper league where I drafted him super late last season in hopes of stashing him and then sort of reaping the benefits this year. And it hasn't really worked out so far, obviously with him on IR, but you really can't replace him, right? Like you can look at maybe like an Anthony Cirelli on the wire, someone who's going to maybe step up and play a little bit of right wing for the Lightning. But it's just so tough. A guy like Timu Meier, who we may talk about a little bit later in the show, I saw some questions about him. I think the Sharks they're playing well early on. He's got left wing, right wing eligibility. He's not a bad option if we were looking for a guy who's sort of generating a lot of shots. I think that early on, if a guy isn't putting up points, a good indicator is if he's generating shots on goal. So if you're trying to replace Kucherov, maybe you look to trade if you have the surplus on your roster. But other than that, like it's just so tough to replace someone who's going to, you know, has top five overall upside on the season.
Absolutely. Tough task for sure. A couple of guys that we've talked about already. Joel Farabee, he was on our top 10 sleeper list. He's lighting it up. He's top 10 overall right now in standard categories. I know we're only a week or so into the season, but he's been excellent, even with Kevin Hayes out of the lineup, and Hayes will eventually come back. So maybe that would help Farabee continue what he started here. There's also Oliver Wahlstrom, had a big game the other day for the Islanders. Another guy that was on our breakout list, plays right wing, same as Kucherov, 15% rostered, scored 2 goals on 8 shots in only 14:30 the other day for New York in a bounce back win. So he's another one. There's also Zuccarello's lighting it up. You see the success of Joel Eriksson Ek, which we predicted in the preseason. Kirill Kaprizov was in our top 20. Of course, Zuccarello along for the ride. So that's another right wing that you could find out there. Also those Florida Panthers guys, right? There's going to be a rotating game all year. We're kind of down on Sam Reinhart right now, but he'll bounce back. We're down on Patrick Hornquist, but you can go out and find Anthony Duclair, who has goals in first three games. So, you know, really playing well for Florida. So there are some good options out there. But the keeper league thing, Ben, is really interesting because people were asking about that. Like, should they stash him and hope that he comes back later in the year? And what's Kucherov's value in a keeper league? Having gone through this experience that you have, I mean, would you kind of steer clear of doing that again?
At this point, it's a little dicey, right? He's out for basically all of last season. And you think he's going to come back and be 100% this time around. But I feel like him coming back in the playoffs, I mean, I'm not saying they brought him back early, but like coming off that injury, if he had rested instead of going through that playoff run for the most part, I feel like that would have helped him heading into this season. If he's going to be out long-term this year and it's 2 years in a row, it's tough to keep a guy like that, especially someone like he's only getting older at this point. He's not getting any younger. So it depends on the keeper format too, I guess, how many players you can keep and what's the penalty on that. So if you're in a league where, you know, you're not penalized too much for keeping him a second time in a row, sure, consider it, but I would probably steer clear of him at this point. Honestly, it's a little too risky for me.
I think the best strategy in a keeper league, if you do have Kucherov, maybe you've had him for a few seasons now and you're getting frustrated, you're really getting nothing there in terms of regular season fantasy value. I think you just have to hit the pause button on this one. Wait till he comes back. He's probably going to rip it up in the postseason. Again, the Lightning probably will make a move. Their GM Brisebois is really aggressive. I think he's going to make a move with some additional cap relief to bring in some guys to keep them afloat. So hold Kucherov for now, stash him away. And then next year, you know, you're going to have to plan a little bit long term, but you can sell high as opposed to selling when his value is at an all-time low. Now, I think this is a good segue into Andrei Vasilevskiy, who started the season really shaky. We've got a couple questions about him. Again, people are saying they've got regrets about picking him top 10. He's 2-2-0 with an .893 save percentage. I don't know if we've ever seen Vasi play below a .900. What are you thinking, Pete, now about Vasi? I know we've got him in a shared league. Are you hitting the panic button on Andrei Vasilevskiy?
No, I'm not. I think he'll be fine. I think he's a good enough goalie where even if the roster isn't as good, and the concern that we have is that Yanni Gourde isn't there. By the way, he came back for the Kraken the other day, so go out there and pick him up. Played like 22 minutes in his debut. But they'll miss Yanni Gourde. They'll miss Blake Coleman, who came back the other day from suspension, scored a goal. I expect Coleman to be in the top six, but those are guys that would have normally filled in for Kucherov. So that's why you're concerned about everybody across the board, right? I mean, even last year, they had better fill-ins to play with Braden Point. So you're concerned about Braden Point. You're concerned about Vasilevskiy. Naturally, Vasilevskiy and Hedman are the least of my concerns because I have full trust in both of those players. You know, could Braden Point, Andre Palat in a contract year take a little bit of a dip? Yeah, unfortunately, but I would not push the panic button and sell off any of these guys because this is the real cream of the crop of the NHL in terms of having superstar power. Oh, you know, they only have four superstars right now, not five. I think they'll be just fine. Agree, Ben?
No, yeah, I agree completely. It's way too early, too. Like, I saw you on Twitter just preaching patience for a lot of these questions, and I think that's a big thing early on in the season is to not overreact to stuff like this. And, you know, the Lightning will figure it out. If they have to tighten things up, they'll make adjustments. They have a great coach in John Cooper. The roster isn't as good, but they just need to start playing their game. And as they get, you know, more possession in the offensive zone and less high danger shots for Vasilevskiy, like they're allowing a ton of, like he's seeing so many shots. And he's like, it's just tough playing in that kind of environment, that up and down environment. So once they stabilize things, I think you'll see his stats sort of, you know, get to where they normally are. Right. And then like, he's still going to get wins no matter what. Like this is a guy who's led the NHL in wins the past four seasons. So yeah, there's really no reason to panic on Vasilevskiy right now. Like if we're still talking about this in 2 weeks, in a month or so, and you're still concerned, then sure. But at that point, like, I don't know. I feel like you just kind of have to ride the wave and hope that the Lightning figure this out and get things going.
Now, Ben, you said it's too early to panic here in the NHL season, but I'm not going to lie. I think if you have any Montreal Canadiens on your fantasy squad right now, you are slamming that panic button. Nick Suzuki has done nothing so far. Cole Caulfield, a Calder favorite, has done next to nothing. You have Petrie, who's been disappointing on the back end, and then Jake Allen, who's droppable in all formats right now. I think it's very fair to say, Petey, that this Montreal Canadiens team took a huge hit from the loss of Shea Weber, who speculation there might not suit up again in the NHL, and then Carey Price, who's been the heart and soul of that Canadiens team as far as I can remember. So look, Montreal not off to a great start, but really there's a lot to be concerned about there.
And we talked about it last show, right? They're not going to go out there and be able to find any player close to Philip Deneau's caliber. So yeah, Montreal, the only team in the NHL right now without a point on the season. Of course, we've seen some big surprises with Buffalo and Detroit and Anaheim and the Sharks that Ben mentioned earlier. All those teams look a heck of a lot better, a heck of a lot deeper than Montreal. The guy I'm most concerned about on Montreal, I expect Caulfield to bounce back. I do like the flair of Suzuki and him growing into a number one center now that Deneau is gone over time. But I'm definitely concerned about Tyler Toffoli, because we were talking about him before the season. Totally boom or bust. He's had a couple of seasons in his career where he shot like 5 or 6% when he was with the Kings. Last year was ripping it up. Of course, was the previous year before the trade deadline where he was, you know, boosting his stock a little bit. But that's a guy that's way too hot and cold. So if I was in a shallow league and Tyler Toffoli's on my team and I could pick up a Farabee, or if I could pick up a Wahlstrom, or I could pick up Timo Meier, who covers hits, I would certainly lean that right now, because I don't really like what I'm seeing from Montreal. Division's not going to get any easier, right? I mean, even some of these lower tier teams in the Atlantic are not going to give them a cakewalk anytime soon. Ottawa, Detroit, teams like that, even Buffalo.
Yeah, and the biggest concern, I feel like, is like the Canadians are already mixing up their lines, right? They're already just like throwing them in. Like Toffoli's on the third line. Caulfield was demoted to the third line. Maybe that sparks Suzuki a little bit, playing with Brendan Gallagher and Mike Hoffman. It's concerning. I think the lack of leadership, I hate to use like a more intangible, like hockey kind of excuse for this. But the lack of leadership with Weber and Carey Price not in there is clearly affecting the team. They need to find someone who will step up and sort of lead. And plus, their defense is like pretty underwhelming, I would say. Like Jeff Petrie, for the most part, is a journeyman, right? He peaked a lot later in his career, and he's a great defenseman. But like without that other guy, they really don't have a lot going on the blue line. And I think that'll hurt on special teams, especially the power play. Their power play, like, they have guys, but they need to get things going. So that's tough when you keep losing, because then you spiral, and then, you know, a couple weeks into the season, you don't really know what to do to get out of there. So I'd be concerned about some of these guys. Like you said, if you can get guys in the short term to sort of plug in there and hope that Toffoli and Suzuki, you know, those guys bounce back, then sure, go for it. But you can only wait so long, I feel like. So I agree. I think you should start looking for some replacements for those guys.
Well, it's early, yes. But look, here's the problem is Montreal has shown us nothing, absolutely nothing. If they were at least competitive in a few of those games and they look good generating chances, you'd be like, all right, you know, things are going to go their way. They're going to get the breaks. We haven't seen that at all. They suffered one of their worst home losses in the past decade to the San Jose Sharks the other night. And really, I think that says it all. So when you look at Montreal, yes, there should be some regression to the mean. They should get a little better, but I think it says more about their ceiling this year. Their ceiling's a lot lower than many people thought it was. And if you're a Nick Suzuki manager like I was, I cut the cord on him for a player like Dylan Larkin, who, yes, the Red Wings probably won't be as good as the Canadiens this year, but they showed more offensive flair already in this early NHL season. And I'd at least roll the dice on a team with Detroit that has some upside versus Montreal, which is looking like they're going to be at absolute best, you know, maybe a wild card team, Pete, but it's looking like that's a far, far stretch now.
Yeah, and I'm concerned about guys like the category coverage guys on that team. Like, you know, Hoffman's going to cover power play points for most teams, but Montreal's power play is not very good. So even with him coming back, I worry about that specialty. Brendan Gallagher, you know, was high in goals per 60 last year, but I feel like one reason or another, or injury or, you know, underwhelming line mates through the years, he's just like, he hasn't quite reached his potential in recent years, other than covering hits and shots and things like that. And then there's Josh Anderson, who, you know, like you mentioned, Rob and Ben, when they throw it into the blender, Josh Anderson might not be in the top six anymore like he was at the start of the season. So that's a concern with him, because like a Patrick Hornquist in Florida, which a lot of people were asking about, what should I do with Hornquist? He's playing on the third line. He's playing 11 minutes a game. When a Josh Anderson or a Patrick Hornquist is not getting top six usage to provide that touch of scoring in addition to their hits and shots, they're not nearly as appealing. Patrick Hornquist, when he has the full package, is like a top 50, 75 overall player, as is Josh Anderson. But when you take that scoring pop away, they're much lower on the totem pole.
Now, we're getting a lot of the same type of questions, you know, about the Canadiens as we are with the Chicago Blackhawks. Patrick Kane's name has been thrown up in a number of these questions. Jonathan Toews, who was ice cold to start the season, and Marc-Andre Fleury has been out there too, Ben. Do you feel the same way about the Chicago Blackhawks as you do with Montreal?
I honestly feel more strongly that the Blackhawks are kind of not going to figure this out as much as the Canadiens. I feel like the Canadiens have too many young, talented players, whereas the Blackhawks have they have a mix, but I feel like it's not nearly as good as Montreal. And the Blackhawks defense is just not that good. I watched the Devils Blackhawks game, the opener, and it's just outside of the last 5 minutes, the Devils basically dominated them in that game. And I wonder if it's getting to the point where Patrick Kane and Toews are potentially on their way out. I know they've got 2 years left on their contract. I don't know if that's something that plays into how you like approach them in fantasy, if you hope that the Blackhawks could potentially move one of them or both of them and sort of get them out of that situation. But yeah, it's more concerning for those guys, I think, especially Kane. They don't really have a lot of talent to play with. They need to figure it out. A lot of it is on the blue line, I feel like. I'd be concerned about Fleury at this point. Like, a lot of people thought he was going to retire. He's getting up there in age. He was great on the Golden Knights, but the Golden Knights had a pretty insane roster and blue line to play behind. So I'm pretty concerned about the Blackhawks overall.
Right. They're not going to be able to fix those issues on defense, because as much as I was talking about center being a scarce position, defense even more scarce in real life hockey. So yeah, that's a big problem that they're not going to be able to repair this year. It just feels like, yeah, something, you know, high expectations, flawed roster. It's that same thing playing out once again in the NHL. It's very tough to make something happen and sustain it. Even though the Blackhawks, you know, had an encouraging season last year when so many guys were out, the Hawks have three games left on the homestand: Vancouver, Detroit, and Toronto. I think they could win two of those. You win two or three of those, you get back in the conversation and people forget about this horrific start to the season. So that's one thing to consider. They do have this opportunity in front of them to, you know, stop the bleeding a little bit and get back on the right track. But yeah, Fleury, I didn't take him in any leagues because of this concern. And we had similar concerns about Philip Grubauer. Now I know Grubauer and the Kraken have their home opener coming up at the new arena. I mean, there's a lot of optimism surrounding that team. They've been a little up and down so far, but I mentioned they got Yanni Gourde back. Do you guys think that Grubauer has a better chance of bouncing back than Fleury does?
I'm mixed on Grubauer. I think you're going to get better peripherals than you will with Marc-Andre Fleury. And by the way, I have Fleury in one league. I've actually considered streaming Karel Vejmelka of the Arizona Coyotes right now over Fleury. I'm waiting another week here, but let me tell you, I am aggressive on the waiver wire. But for Grubauer, I just think the Kraken can settle this thing down a little bit. It's going to be tough that their early road trip, right? We weren't expecting them to come out raffle off 10 wins here. But I don't think that team is very good either. I just think they're a little bit safer than the Chicago Blackhawks, who, yes, history's on their side, but age is not. So I would go out there. I would take a Yanni Gourde. I would probably rather see him on my fantasy bench than McCann, just personally speaking, ice time wise. But with Grubauer, I think you're going to need to lower your expectations a lot as well. The only thing I need to say here, Ben, is that this is a player that was with the Washington Capitals when they were basically contending for the President's Trophy every single year. Then he went to the Colorado Avalanche, were an even better team, in my opinion, fantasy-wise, than Washington. Now he goes to Seattle, which, if we're talking about Yanni Gourde playing 22 minutes a night here, it's not going to be the same.
No, and you mentioned it. You said it all right there, right? He's playing for the Capitals. He's playing for the Avalanche, and now he's playing for an expansion team. It just changes your mindset completely and how you approach goaltending, because you have to compensate for that lack of talent in front of you. And it's just not something that's going to be easy for the Kraken. I think the big issue, and even with Gourde back, they're going to have a line that's going to be pretty good. That'll be okay. But their best line will be, you know, a second or third line on most teams, which is the issue, because when you need a goal, when you need a line to go out there and shut the other team down, I don't know if they really have anything resembling that. And their defense, while they have names and they have a guy like Oleksiak who can take up a lot of space, they're old, right? Larson, Giordano, they've been around for a while. They don't really have guys that can move the puck as well. Like Vince Dunn is probably the guy that you would look to move the puck, be a puck mover, but he's a guy that was barely playing for like the St. Louis Blues. So yeah, it's a tough situation with Grubauer. He's a great goaltender, but it's hard to get anything in fantasy out of a guy who's on a team that, one, probably isn't going to get a ton of wins. Like maybe his peripherals, like, you know, get a little bit better. But I don't know. It's like you, I think it's time to look at streaming options on the waiver wire.
And Petey, we had a question from Phil Brady that actually asked, he has the Seattle tandem. Do you think it's a good idea to keep those together? What do you think about that?
Well, so Driedger is on IR, or he's banged up right now. I think they were going to give him the start the other day, but he wasn't ready to go. So if there's an injury involved, I don't have full trust in that tandem. I only like to draft a tandem or pick up and secure a tandem if I have relative to high trust in the team. I don't in the Kraken, so therefore I would say do not stack the tandem. Just go out there to the waiver wire. I know some waiver wires are pretty slim right now at the goalie position. Holtby's probably gone. He's been a stud through three games for the Dallas Stars. Definitely has a chance to win that job or at least be the 1A. You know, there are a couple other guys deeper down the line. Elvis Merzlikins, I think, if he's the 1A, even Korpisalo as the 1B, those guys aren't going to be too shabby for the Blue Jackets. I just wonder, when you get to that lower tier teams, the surprises so far, is there any chance that one of those four teams that we thought would be bottom dwellers could be a playoff team? I'm talking about the Sharks, the Ducks, the Red Wings, and the Buffalo Sabres. I think we all know that a lot of those teams will fall out of contention, especially with their goaltending situations. But the one that maybe catches my eye is the goalie tandem of Nedeljkovic and Thomas Greiss. Thomas Greiss has been really good through 2 years. He's used to facing a high shot volume. He did last year, still had good peripherals. What do you guys think about? And that includes Anaheim. So we are talking about John Gibson, but we've seen that in previous years where Gibson starts hot, then falls off a cliff because the team just can't support him.
Yeah, I mean, I like Greiss a lot. I actually picked him up in a league as a streamer. I feel like the Sharks, at least roster-wise, are a team where they feel like they could, you know, put together a pretty good season and bounce back. They have a decent amount of talent, I think. And Timu Meier, Thomas Hertl, if those guys sort of bounce back and mesh with the – like, they still have Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns. I know both of them are up in age, but – at one point, that was probably one of the best blue lines in the NHL. So I like the Sharks. I think their offense is going to be good. The Red Wings are interesting. They have a lot of young talent, so I think that'll help them a lot. Bertuzzi's looked really good. Robbie mentioned Larkin picking him up. Like, Larkin's, again, a bona fide number one center in the NHL. And they have a lot of hungry young guys. And I think that's a recipe, like you said, with the Ducks, like really all those teams, I like them. The Sabres are the one I guess I would be the most concerned about, because we've sort of seen this kind of thing from them before in the past. But yeah, I think out of those four teams, the Red Wings and the Sharks make the most sense as potential sleepers.
I'm warming up to the Sharks a lot, and I think two players really deserve a lot of credit there. William Eklund on the second line as a rookie has been tremendous so far, kind of a surprise and maybe still a dark horse Calder candidate if you want to make a future bet on that. And then Jonathan Dahlin on the first line with them playing on the left side has been really good. He had two goals in their last game. You know, granted it was against Montreal, but he had four shots and played 15 minutes. So that's what you like to see if you're in a really deep league. I wouldn't hesitate to stream either of those guys. But I think San Jose's biggest asset this year was that they got rid of Martin Jones, and credit to Aiden Hill. He's been wonderful for them as well. James Reimer there in a backup role you might look at in a really deep league. I'm not going to go crazy all in on the Sharks just yet. I think the answer to that question for me would be without doubt Detroit. From what I've seen so far, this is a competitive hockey team. What I mean by competitive, they're going to be in most games. When you see Dylan Larkin stand up for himself, kind of play a rough and tumble style, I like seeing that. I like seeing guys that really want to win, that want to compete, that want to win every time they're on the ice. And Tyler Bertuzzi, this guy is blowing me away so far. He's a walking highlight reel. It's unfortunate for him that he will miss his time when they go to Canada. So keep an eye on your roster for fantasy. He's not eligible to suit up in those games as it stands today, late October. So keep an eye on that storyline. But Petey, love what I've seen from the Red Wings. And Mo Sider is a guy you and I are really high on. He's having a tremendous start to the season as well.
Right. Sider, I would definitely keep. And Jamie Drysdale from the Ducks too. Those are guys that I know we talked about Byram versus Sider the last show, but Drysdale had a heck of a game, scored the winner. You know, he's going to put up some great point totals this year for the Ducks, especially on power play one. We've already seen some of those Ducks defensemen coming out of the woodwork, man, and scoring some points. Cam Fowler, Kevin Shattenkirk. Of course, I'm most interested in Drysdale for fantasy, but the other two guys are not bad streaming options. They're playing a lot of minutes. They play on the power play. There is some sneaky talent in Anaheim with Comtois and Trevor Zegras and, you know, some of these other guys. Ricard Raquel's off to a hot start. You know, that's not a team that you would ever take multiple guys from in fantasy, but maybe in the right spot, I would consider any of those guys that the Ducks are offering to get you some points here. But for that reason that you mentioned, Robbie, I actually think that Tyler Bertuzzi is a sell high candidate for what he's doing so far. You could get a lot in return. I expect a guy like Puljujarvi to keep this going because he's with McDavid and the Oilers are a great regular season team. But will Tyler Bertuzzi keep this going? I would say probably not. And if he's going to miss, you know, 5-10 games when they're playing in Canada, that's a problem for me.
If I'm in a bangers league, I'm not touching the trade button on Bertuzzi, no matter what. If it is standard Yahoo categories, I think that's a great strategy, Petey. I'd probably lean towards keeping Bertuzzi. I think that top line is far too dynamic right now to sell a player like that, especially early season, but I like where your head's at. The player I might be willing to cut ties with, Ben, is Braden Holtby right now. Just a tremendous start for the player. But when you look at Dallas as an organization, you know, one bad game from Holtby, they've got two guys kind of breathing down his neck. Is Holtby, do you think he's the real deal? Is he back to the form that we saw in Washington?
We saw what the Stars did when they went to the Cup, right? They basically dragged Anton Khudobin to the Cup. So I wouldn't put it past them. Like, he's still got something left in the tank, clearly. Maybe he's another guy where you're selling high on him right now, sort of capitalize on him early. But at the same time, he could run away and be a number one and, you know, contend for the Vezina potentially if the Stars get it together. I think you can make arguments for both sides. I would tend to like play it safe. So I think Holtby can be the guy for the Stars, regardless of the people that are behind him. I'm high on Holtby.
Right. And I think that Jake Ottinger at some point will get called up this year, probably because Dallas seems to always deal with injuries for whatever reason. So if somebody goes down, whether it's Holtby or Khudobin or, you know, I don't know if Bishop will come back. Hopefully he does. But if he doesn't, you know, then Ottinger's the third guy. So I do think Ottinger, if you're in a deep league, a keeper league where he's floating on the waiver wire, the same goes for Kaapo Kähkönen from the Wild. Those are guys that you could pick up now, stash them for a little while, and I think they're both going to get some work. Kähkönen will get more work than Ottinger just because of the situation in Dallas, but I think you bring up a good point, Ben. I mean, there are so many games to go around down there, so many production swings, even for the elite teams out there, right? Things right now for teams like Vegas and Colorado and Tampa Bay are not going swimmingly at all. So I think that Dallas will definitely hit some roadblocks along the way. They'll switch the gears and they'll go to guys like Khudobin or Bishop if he comes back, or they'll go back to the AHL guy in Ottinger. So those are guys to consider for sure in terms of like stashing guys, just in case things don't go swimmingly for Holtby all year long, which is kind of likely to happen.
And Mikko Koskinen, I think, should be added to that list. The only reason I bring his name up is just because Mike Smith is on the shelf right now, day to day. He's going under further evaluations on the severity of the injury. It doesn't sound that serious right now, right? But Koskinen's just a guy that you're going to get exposure there. The Edmonton high-octane offense. So with a lot of goal support for Koskinen, he's played okay before as a streamer, Ben. I've done that myself. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Koskinen is one of my favorite streamer names in short stretches. But I think the overarching thing when we talk about goalies here is so many big-name guys are off to a bad start, like Connor Hellebuck in Winnipeg is worse than Vasilevsky right now. But that's just a player I can't press the panic button on either, because his track record is crystal clear. He's one of the best in the NHL, and I do think the Jets will smooth things out eventually.
Yeah, I agree. Hellebuck, I wouldn't worry about too much. Similar to Vasilevsky, right? Maybe the Jets aren't the same type of team as the Lightning, but it's the same sort of situation. As far as Koskinen, like I'd get on that right away. Honestly, it's really just like Mike Smith is old. Mike Smith is getting up there in age. Even if he's got like a nagging kind of injury, even if it's something that's potentially minor, those things build up over the course of a season, and the goalie position overall is a lot of wear and tear. So the fact that he's got so many miles on his legs, if he goes down and he's out, Koskinen, like you said, he's going to get a ton of goal support. He's on a really good team in Edmonton. They're going to win games. He's going to have, you know, even if he has games where he gives up three goals, four goals, if they get the win, you're still getting some, you know, fantasy goodness there. So I'd say Koskinen definitely worth scooping up if he's still out there. But yeah, I would not worry at all about Hellebuck at this point. It's, again, way too early.
And all the other top goalies out there, including Kemper, Robin Leonard has been decent, 909, gave up two goals yesterday to the St. Louis Blues. But, you know, out of the top five, six goalies, even Sorokin struggling, like Shesterkin's been the only one that's been a stud so far, despite his team's issues. He's actually been amazing when he's been in the crease for the Rangers. So he's surprisingly the only guy that's returning value to this point in the season, but we're only a week plus in. So a lot of those guys will eventually turn it around. Your patience will pay off. Maybe one of those guys falls off a little bit, but I'm sure that the Jets will be on a better track. Unfortunate thing with them is this Blake Wheeler situation with COVID protocol. And, you know, if the team was exposed at all, so just something to keep an eye on there, because the Jets have been a little underwhelming to start the season, especially that loss to the Sharks. I couldn't believe how that one kind of got away from them after they had like a 2-0 lead. But I think the Jets will be okay.
Now, you mentioned Kemper, who got his doors blown off the other night. I think you've got to, if you're a fantasy manager and you've got Kemper, you got to run to the waiver wire and stash Francouz right now. Kemper does not have the same track record as Hellebuck, as Vasilevsky, right? We love Kemper. We love the Avalanche. We can gloat over them every day. And no, do not trade Cale Makar because he's cold right now in fantasy. But for Darcy Kemper specifically, I think you need an insurance policy there. And it's not JoJo. It's not Devin Dubnyk, whatever. It's not one of those guys, right? I think it's going to be Francouz when he comes back. It's a good stash if he's out there. If you've got IR plus, I'd rather have a goalie stashed than a center-only guy like Malkin, like Eichel, or left wing Evander Kane. I don't want to touch those guys in fantasy right now. I think you got to go with the goalie. As Ben said, it's super thin. And Francouz, he's shown he can be a number one there if relied upon. So Stash him right now.
Yeah, and even I may be a homer in saying this, but Jonathan Bernier is a great pickup at this point. I do think, I don't know if you guys look at a lot of those like analytical charts and stuff that float around Twitter, but apparently the Devils are playing insane hockey through, I know it's through two games and it's been two bad opponents, but Blackwood's on IR now. He's got a heel injury on top of all of the potential, you know, COVID issues that he could run into. So I'm worried about Blackwood, you know, being able to sustain and play games. So Bernie is going to have to play a ton of games for the Devils. I think he's a good guy to pick up. He's looked good so far. And if the Devils keep playing this way, especially once Ty Smith comes back, they'll be pretty much at full strength after that. Hopefully Jack Hughes isn't hurt, but when they're at full strength on their blue line, they're going to move the puck really well. And they're going to have a lot of offensive zone time, and it's going to decrease the amount of, you know, shots that Bernier is going to have to face, and in particular, like high danger kind of shots. So Bernier is a guy, I picked him up at like 14%, I think, on Yahoo. So he's a guy that I would definitely look to if you need some goalie help.
Bernier is really reliable. I mean, he had a 914 save percentage for that horrible Detroit Red Wings team, one of the worst in the league in 24 games last year. He's at 911 right now, 913 in his career. Think about all the different teams he's played for. Some of the ups, mostly downs for Bernier. So I like that waiver wire tip, Ben, for sure. And the defense in Jersey is half decent this year, especially when Smith comes back. I got Ty Smith stashed in two of my three leagues, so I'm looking forward to his eventual arrival. But even Ryan Graves is someone that's been decent. He hasn't been a liability. In fact, he's been the opposite of that in fantasy leagues in the plus minus category. So, and he's chipping in some points as well. So the Jersey defense, of course, not the elite from the heyday of that franchise, but a lot better than the Jersey Devils defenses of the past 10 years or so.
I just want to jump in here and say we do need to bring up the fact that, remember a few seasons ago, the Buffalo Sabres were in first place in the NHL until like American Thanksgiving or something, you know, or they were at least top five at that point. So keep in mind, things can go south quickly in fantasy. They can also go north quickly in fantasy. You know, instead of picking up Jeff Skinner and Olsen and the crew up there in Buffalo, I'm going to ride that one out a little bit longer. But I think when you're talking about a Colorado, you're talking about Tampa, even though they look different this year, and Winnipeg and whatever, you know, yeah, you're going to give them time. But I do think Ben brings up great points about New Jersey. They look like the Dougie Hamilton addition was exactly what they needed. Jack Hughes does look like it was a serious injury. Hopefully it's not. He's a young guy, so hopefully he can get back quickly either way. But I like that. There's a lot worse you can do, I think, on the waiver wire than streaming from New Jersey, than streaming from Detroit. Teams like that that at least have more appeal than a Buffalo.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Buffalo a little bit. So Don Granato, what an amazing job that guy has done, because he came in last year in the midst of the epic losing streak for all the wrong reasons, right? And he turned that team around. A lot of those guys were more productive down the stretch of the season. You got the Jack Eichel turmoil. He's not there. Casey Mittelstadt got injured in the opener. He's out week to week. Somehow this team's 3-0 with wins, of course, against the Coyotes, which is no accomplishment, but, you know, beating the Canucks, beating the Habs, they're half decent teams. I know neither of them looks great to start the season, but they're still teams we expected better from at the beginning of the year. So is there anybody on Buffalo that you're even given a glimmer to? I know Jeff Skinner looks like he's early makings of maybe a bounce back season, which is good to see because of all the money they're throwing at him annually. Also, Victor Olofsson is a guy that I've liked in years past. If he's on first power play, he could get you some garbage time points, even if they fall off a cliff and are one of the worst teams in the league when it's all said and done.
I'd say Olofsson, if I were picking anyone from the Sabres. Yahoo, he's 14% rostered, so he's a little bit on the high end. But really, all of the Sabres guys right now are producing in fantasy leagues, and they're all available. So like Robbie said, I'm like, he's going to wait a little bit on the Sabres. I think that's not a bad idea, but if you can pick up one of these guys, I don't think you should stack the Sabres by any means, because again, they have played teams that, you know, aren't the best early on. So we'll see once they start playing teams like the Capitals, the Bruins, so, you know, tougher teams to play against. But yeah, Olofsson makes sense. He's on the power play. He's getting a decent amount of ice time. Colin Miller's a defenseman that like he's also producing, playing a decent amount, you know, putting up shots. So that's a good sign. Any of those guys are going to be available, and they're decent options at this point. I'd be a little bit more concerned about guys like Kyle Okposo or Jeff Skinner, right? Because they're up there in age. They could get hurt. They could regress a little bit. They could get demoted if they're not producing, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think Olofsson and Miller would be the guys I'd be honing in on a little bit on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I would not hesitate to stream those guys. If you have players on your team like a Kaapo Kakko, who you can definitely drop at this point. Alexis Lafreniere, unfortunately, looks like a drop candidate. The New York Rangers reunited the top line of Panarin, Zibanejad, and Chris Kreider, who's going to play the right side now. So maybe some dual eligibility for him upcoming in Yahoo leagues. So if you've got guys that you can cut the cord with, absolutely. But if it came down to me deciding to drop, you know, let's say like a Nick Suzuki, who's center right wing for a Victor Olofsson, I would just be a little bit more hesitant there because it is Buffalo. Credit to Don Granato, no question about it. But I just can't overlook the past 3 or 4 year history here of the Sabres in fantasy.
I love how the tune changes so quickly. I already saw somebody bulletin board material. Remember, we had Buffalo projected for a league worst 19 wins. Someone was already saying, hey, they already have 3. So, you know, they look like they're going to shatter that at this point, but I still think they'll probably get something like 20, 25 wins. And so there will be some serious regression there. When you got Okposo and Zemgus Girgensons, leading your scoring charge, I don't think it's going to continue.
Listen, Don Granato was on NHL at the Rink. Go listen to that. But
nice.
Craig Anderson in goal, like the goalie situation is just unsustainable also in Buffalo. But you have to tip the cap to the coach, to the players, because they were sick and tired of just getting ragged on and by people like us, you know, projecting them for 19 wins. And early here in the season, they've played well. And again, we've said it for how many years, Robbie? Buffalo is an unbelievable hockey market. The NHL folks root for Buffalo because, quite honestly, the fans, they show up. They watch the national games on television. They show up to the barn to watch hockey when the team is good. And it's a hockey city. So the team, you know, it's better when they're good. So I don't want to say we're partial to Buffalo, but it's nice when the Sabres are playing well.
I think it's nice to sing early season praises too. Another team I would credit right now is the Philadelphia Flyers, who played a great game against the Boston Bruins on Wednesday. Credit to them, because Boston came back, tied that thing up at 3, and then Philly came out in the third period and put the clamp down. That's something we haven't seen this Flyers team do in a long, long time. Now, granted, when you're talking about Buffalo, you're talking about Philadelphia, you can't get too high, you can't get too low. But I do want to at least tip my cap and say good job so far, Flyers. They look good. And again, if you're looking for streamers in fantasy, Philadelphia's a team you can definitely turn to right now.
Ben, some of these guys have been lighting it up. I mentioned Farabee, but also Konechny, who's on the top line with Giroux and Couturier. Keith Yandel, coming back, bounce back city for him after his role changed in Florida last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think Keith Yandel is someone that if he's on power play one, people can start to take seriously because of his pedigree in that category.
No, yeah. And Cam Atkinson is a perfect guy to pick up, I think, at this point, because you know what he's capable of doing. He's capable of scoring 30 goals. And if he's going to get time on the power play, if he's going to get, you know, a decent amount of minutes, I know he's sort of middle six at this point, but if he's going to get those opportunities to score goals, he's going to bury them. So yeah, playing on that the Flyers roster is pretty deep at this point with Konechny, Farabee, Atkinson. You know, they still have Couturier and Giroux. So yeah, the Flyers feel like a good team to sort of invest a little bit in. And it's surprising that Atkinson and Konechny are both, you know, under 60% owned on Yahoo League. So I would definitely look at those guys, especially after that game against the Bruins. Like, I feel like that's what you sort of have to look for if you're trying to make decisions early on in fantasy hockey. Like, when is that team going to have that like signature early season win? And I feel like that was what it was for the Flyers against the Bruins. And that's when you're like, okay, this team's sort of legit. So yeah, I've always been high on Atkinson, a US guy. So he'd definitely be on my waiver wire radar.
I liked the Bruins last night at the price, and I'm watching the game and Taylor Hall scores a goal. I'm looking at the Instagram questions we got. Taylor Hall over under 60 points. Boys, what do you think?
I'm leaning towards under just because the past couple of years I feel like have been downgraded in terms of his productivity. He's not that MVP caliber standalone player anymore. He's had some injuries. I just don't think his career is headed in that direction. That said, 60 is definitely attainable for Taylor Hall. But I just wonder, like, is he going to have that on most nights? Like some nights when they're facing inferior opponents, you could expect maybe Coyle to have a big game or whoever they're playing up there at the time. But I just don't think they have a dynamic enough number two center without David Krejci anymore to get Taylor Hall to 60 this particular year. So I would say no.
I'm going under as well. Again, you said it best, Pete, the second line center is a concern, but look a little bit deeper on the Boston lineup in net. Now Swayman had a great opportunity to win that game last night and say he's the number one guy. Allmark's now getting to start Friday. Keep an eye on that one, fantasy managers. But for Taylor Hall, he's just had a trouble fitting in outside of his MVP season with the New Jersey Devils a few years ago. I'm going to go with the under there, Ben.
Yeah, I would say this too. How many times did we see Taylor Hall in Buffalo with a breakaway last year and he just couldn't finish the deal? So he's coming down the pipe there, set up by a nice pass with from McAvoy. And I'm thinking, there's no way this puck's going in, and it's a goal. So, you know, 60 is a lot. I would lean to the under also, but it's nice to see him actually produce early here a little bit because last year was just a nightmare season for him.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with both of you guys. I think it's under 60 points. The Bruins were bound to sort of regress at some point. I think we're sort of seeing age hit Marchand and Bergeron. They still have Pastrnak, so they still have that. Again, they still have the top line, and they always will, most likely. But yeah, the rest of the roster is pretty underwhelming. Taylor Hall put up all those points on that MVP season because he was playing like 20, 21, 22 minutes a game as a wing, which like it's you don't really see it too much. And he was that entire Devils team, like the whole team was Taylor Hall. So I just don't see him getting the ice time. I don't see him getting the opportunities really. To put up 60 points. Can he score like 20? I think he's like can definitely score like 20 goals this season. I think that's really what he'll do is he'll score 20, 25 goals. Won't do much as far as assists or setting up people. But yeah, he's getting towards like the not end of his career, but he's getting up there.
Yeah, Josh Roussart on Twitter, last question, quick hitter from me here, asked, is Tony D the real deal in Carolina this year? We look at his stats. He's got 2 power play points through 2 games, which is nothing to scoff at, though he's only playing 15 minutes. How do we feel about Tony D?
I think that power play time is really lucrative, you know, if he's going to be on first unit, which he's been a good amount, he's going to rack up assists by default. So, yeah, Tony D, I think, is a top 30, top 35 fantasy defenseman for this year. You know, even with all the negative storylines surrounding that player on and off the ice, I mean, we had him on our top 10 sleeper list for this year. So we kind of put that aside, change of scenery, at least this particular season. I wouldn't have Tony D in a keeper league, but, you know, for a redraft league this particular year, I do still think most nights Carolina could explode and, you know, dismantle their opponents offensively speaking. And therefore, he'll get you an assist or two most nights. So he could really be among the top 15 or so scorers at the position by the end of the year. And he doesn't even have to be as good as he was a couple of years ago with the Rangers. So very high floor for him, as long as he's playing and as long as he's on power play one.
Yeah, that's what I would be sort of concerned about is the ice time and that it's, he's pretty much just a power play specialist at this point. Yeah. And I do worry a little bit about the off ice stuff and how he meshes with the room. And if that sort of goes south, what happens? Does he end up being a scratch here and there? So I'd be a little risk. I'd be cautious with D'Angelo at this point. It's only been a couple games. I want to see him play more ice time, at least more consistent ice time, I think, outside of the power play. Because there are going to be times where the Canes get into games where it's, you know, sort of defensive minded and you're not putting up as many points and he's just not getting the even strength ice time to sort of justify, you know, getting too high on him, I guess. So I'd be cautious with D'Angelo, but like you said, if he's going to stick on the power play and the Canes are going to rack up the power play points, I think there's definite upside there.
Right. His 2 points on the season so far were both power play assists that came in the season opener against the Islanders. He's playing 15:55 a game through two. So still very early for Tony D, but, you know, hopefully it's a good fit for him. One guy that I wanted to mention, we've been getting a lot of questions about before we wrap, Roope Hintz. People are down on him right now because he hasn't had a point yet. I know that he was nearly a point per game last year. The one thing I would mention, though, that seems very obvious is that, you know, Jason Robertson has not yet played a game this year. He's day-to-day and injured. So that is his trusted line mate. Their success or projected success in our projections is collective. So I think it hinges on one being healthy and the other being healthy as well. So I would expect a bounce back eventually for Hintz once Robertson comes back. But what do you guys think? Because it is a very crowded situation, not only in the crease, but also in the forward group for Dallas.
I might drop Hintz for Faxa right now if you're in a league that Faxa is available. Faxa is an absolute beast. He's the new Tyler Seguin in Dallas, I guess, right now through a couple games. Guy's playing 19 a game, like a number one center. And I think you said it, Pete, with Hintz skating with Jacob Peterson and Joel Kiviranta, they don't have the same cachet as Robertson does. Okay, so wait till Robertson gets back, maybe on Hintz. But if Faxa is in your league, pick up right now.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about Hintz. The ice time is concerning through four games. He's really not skating second line center ice time at this point. He's like just under 14 minutes per game. So that's like just a red flag, I feel like, if he's not going to be on the ice. So yeah, I mean, you can wait for Robertson to get back. I think that's probably when they'll start clicking, but at this point, if he's going to keep not putting up points, you sort of have to pull the trigger and get rid of him. So I agree with Robbie. I think you can drop Hintz at this point. I think there are guys, especially early on, where you can find hidden gems, right? Like if you had pulled the trigger on dropping a guy like Hintz for, say, Bertuzzi, who is readily available early on in the season, like at this point, and I don't think you're going to be regretting that in a couple weeks either. So I think you can be pretty, you know, you can be aggressive with dropping Hintz and sort of look for someone to replace him.
And Faxa, who Robbie mentioned, has been a category cog so far. 1 goal, 3 assists, +3, 1 power play point, 7 shots, 8 hits, and 9 blocked shots. So if you're in one of those bangers leagues that counts hits and blocks, like Robbie and I are in our experts league, we picked them up. We needed a fourth or fifth center deep league. So do not hesitate to invest in that player with that big role, despite all the depth in Dallas. The fact that he's playing 18 plus minutes a game with all those moving pieces is really impressive. So Ben, thanks so much for coming on, man. It's been great to catch up with you. Look forward to collaborating with you in the future as part of the DraftKings deal, hopefully. And great to see you, man.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, guys. Thanks for having me. And yeah, hopefully we'll be able to do some more fun stuff throughout the season, and you guys will hopefully see me again.
So thanks again to Ben for coming on at Ben Zwyman, DKN on Twitter, DraftKings Nation, DraftKings Live. It's a great follow for any of the fantasy sports that you're playing. Also wanted to plug Don Granato, like Bobby said, was on At The Rink, NHL At The Rink. Also, Travis Green, coach of the Canucks, was on The Chirp with Darren Millard. Definitely go out and listen to those shows after you finish this episode. So we'll be back with you on Monday, NHL Fantasy on Ice, for Rob Reese, Ben Zwyman, Bob Bender, Pete Jensen. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.